I work for Holden in a remove capacity.
Hello.
And I work down at Fields Point. My wife and I are, in addition to be parking lot attendants, we're also massage therapists. And we're practicing, actually don't realize this, but you're a trial audience for us to try. We hope to, in the future, after Holden, become teachers of a particular modality of massage, which we have been especially trained in, and which we use when we have time from our parking lot duties to treat people in pain. And so we've been up here actually on a retreat this week to try and get some study time in so that we could learn this material better. And we're supposed to get a tape of ourselves together to send to the people that we'll be doing this for. We thought, well, even better than a tape, we'll scare ourselves and do a presentation in front of real people. And also, in being at Holden, people have asked us for a couple of years what it is we do. And if you're a massage therapist and you come to Holden and all of a sudden, oh, I got this little ache. Oh, I got this little twinge in my shoulder. And so we'd like to, if you came here to get work time, we want to thank all the people who volunteered their bodies for the demonstration. However, there won't be any physical demonstration today. But we thought we'd offer this for those... they're leaving. We thought we'd offer this informal presentation to familiarize people with how pain comes about in the body. For the most part, 90% of the pain in the body is associated with soft tissue dysfunction. Soft tissue, I mean muscles and ligaments and tendons and aponeurotic tissue and fascia, different soft tissues in the body. Pain is a much misunderstood phenomenon in our society. Doctors who go to school for 8 to 10 years, go to medical school, on the average, how much time do you think they would spend studying about pain, the mechanisms of pain?
Same as vitamins, not much.
They have, those physicians that I've spoken with get less than 8 hours of study in that time on the mechanisms of pain. It's not well understood. Pain is not something you can take a picture of. You can't take an x-ray of pain. It's not something you can put your finger on. If a physician, you come in complaining of a pain in your shoulder, they'll take a picture of your shoulder. They might do a dye study of your shoulder. If they can't find anything wrong in the picture, if the bones line up, chiropractors will take pictures of your bones. If everything looks in a line and they can't see any bones out of place, then they can't really find out what's wrong. They'll say, gee, we don't know why you hurt Mrs. Jones. Mrs. Jones is in a great deal of pain. A psychiatrist, they'll say, gee, it must be psychosomatic pain. It's all in your head. Well, Mrs. Jones feels like it's in her shoulder, and there rarely are physiological reasons why people experience pain. And I wanted to discuss some of those so that you can understand the mechanisms of pain. Hi. And so we put together this presentation. So you can understand the mechanics of pain as we view it from a soft tissue perspective. As massage therapists, our scope of practice allows us to work on the soft tissues of the body. We aren't chiropractors. We don't shove bones. We don't do manipulations. We don't do diagnosis. But we have, as specialists in soft tissue, we can learn about the muscles and soft tissues of the body and know them very well. And there are certain reasons why people are in pain, and I want to discuss those with you today. So you get to be my practice folks. If you turn the... So our discussion today is to examine the parameters of pain, where they come from, and how they relate to soft tissue, and to make this clear for you. We'll be doing some slides, we'll be doing some talks, and we'll have a little bit of video that we'll run to discuss the various aspects of where pain comes from. My wife and I are neuromuscular therapists. It's a massage, has many different modalities now. There's Rolfers, and there's people who do Traeger, and there's people who do Swedish massage, and there's people that do whole modalities of Bindegesweb and Russian sports massage and many different varieties of massage. My wife and myself have studied a form of therapy called neuromuscular therapy, invented by a man named Paul St. John. Neuromuscular is a buzzword. All it means is neuro has to do with nerves, muscular has to do with the musculoskeletal system of the body. Neuromuscular therapy, as we define it, is bringing about homeostasis, or a state of balance between the nervous system and the musculoskeletal system. We find that when we do that, we can eliminate 90% of the pain of the body. Most of the pain that people experience are in relationship with the musculoskeletal system and the nervous system. So if we can put those back in balance, we can eliminate or have an effect on much of the pain in the body. So it's different schools have different thoughts. Chiropractors think that most pain comes from bones being out of place. Our experience is that there's a lot more opportunities for nerves to be entrapped by soft tissue than by bones, and we'll discuss that a little farther on. There are certain laws that we work with in neuromuscular therapy which form a philosophy and a science and background, and that's what we're going to discuss today. We aren't going to discuss too much of the techniques that we use, more of the philosophy and the science behind what we do. I'd like to discuss where we feel that there are areas of focus that we work on when we do neuromuscular therapy, where we find that pain arises from in the body. First one I want to talk about is a big word. I'm going to be using big words, and I will try and simplify them for you. Again, your practice session, so I get to use some of the big words. The first big word is ischemia. Ischemia simply means lack of blood. We find that blood is the healing factor in the body. We find that tissue that has less blood tends to be more tender. Tissue should be able to take 5 or 10 pounds of pressure. If you press yourself on some place that doesn't hurt very much, and you can press with a fair amount of pressure, you don't feel any pain at all or any tenderness. When you find an ischemic tissue, or a tissue that has a decreased blood supply, you find that that tissue tends to be very tender with a very small amount of pressure. So one of the chief characteristics of ischemic tissue is that it's very tender. When a muscle is constricted, if this is a muscle and this is a blood vessel that goes through it, you'll find that when the muscle tightens, it squeezes the blood vessel, and so the tissue gets less blood. Blood is the factor which brings the oxygen to the cells of the tissue, which brings the nourishment to the cells, and also takes away the waste products of the cells. Waste products of the cells are the normal functioning of a cell. It's just like a human being. You take in food and pure materials, and you use the useful parts of it, and then you excrete the waste products. The same happens on a cellular level. They take in the oxygen, vitamins, and nutrients for the use as a cell, and then they excrete what they don't need. What they excrete are things like carbonic acid, lactic acid, hyaluronic acid, serotonin. These chemicals that they secrete are very toxic. It is like having an acid bath. They're very neurostimulating. If you're, it would be like putting your hand in acid, and it's very neurostimulating, very painful. So when you have a lack of blood, the tissues are sort of swimming in their own waste products, and they become very irritated and very tender. So the first thing we want to do in relieving pain, or one of the main causes of pain, is lack of blood. We wish to increase blood to areas. Increasing blood to areas helps relieve the pain. Next thing that we work with are trigger points. There's a definition of trigger point. An area of low neurological activity that transitions into an area of high neurological activity, when stimulated or stressed that creates secondary referred sensations to other parts of the body. What does all that mean? It means that these are areas, trigger points are areas in our soft tissues, or actually almost any tissue in the body, which has a high resistance to electrical impulses going through it, a high ohm factor, if you will. And then when these are stressed or excited, these little areas of resistance fire high intensity impulses, a lot of electricity into the nervous system. The nervous system doesn't like high intensity nervous system, it likes low intensity nervous system. And when it gets high intensity nervous system, it tries to dissipate that energy, and it sends referred sensations to other parts of the body. Referrals are sensations like heat or cold or burning or numbness and tingling that happen in areas that are remote to the actual source of pain. That's why we find as massage therapists that you can press on a point here in the shoulder and the person that you're working on may experience a numbness or tingling down their arm. Gee, I feel that in my hand. We can press on an area in the neck and people will get referred pains or symptoms up into their head, into headache. You can reproduce headache patterns. These are very important for us to understand so that when a person comes in with a headache pattern, you don't just rub their head. It may be that there's a trigger point functioning in the body that from an injury, from a trauma, from poor postural alignment, these trigger points can form over time by muscles being tight and constricted for a long period of time. One of the main things to understand about referred pain, or pain that's remote from the actual source, is that that area is always ischemic. So if you have a trigger point in your head and it refers it, excuse me, a trigger point in your shoulder and it refers up into your head, the area up over your eye is an ischemic area. And we've already said that ischemic areas are more tender. So we want to address these trigger points. Here are some examples of trigger points. This muscle here is called the sternocleidomastoid muscle. Muscles have great names that we all had to learn in massage school. You don't have to learn them, but. When you sit there, there's this big muscle on the front of your neck. If you're lying down and start to raise your head, this big muscle will pop out here. And it goes from the back of your skull, your cranium, down to the sternum and to the clavicle. This muscle harbors four trigger points in the front section. And when these trigger points are excited, they will refer pain up over the eye. This is a chronic migraine headache arc. A lot of people who have migraine headaches have this sort of pain pattern. It will refer up into the back of the head area. Probably nobody here ever gets any headaches or anything in the back of their head, right? The clavicular head behind it has trigger points that refer right into the ear. People who have roaring in their ears, tinnitus aurorium, may be having referred areas coming from the sternocleidomastoid muscles. People who get headaches right over their eyebrow, right up there, that one localized point there could be having referred pain. The source of it, they may feel it up here, but the source of it may be down in the sternocleidomastoid muscle. There's a little muscle on the back of your head called the occipitalis, which refers pain up into the front of the head also. It's a little muscle right here. People who have, who are in whiplash, whose head goes forward and then goes back and slams into the headrest, may develop trigger points in this small thin muscle here. And every time they go and lie down on a pillow and they put pressure on this muscle right back here, they lie down and they get this headache in their eye. So we have to examine, understand the idea of trigger points so that we can be thorough in our examinations and relieve these. Trigger points happen all over the body. This big muscle here, the trapezius muscle, which everybody grabs, has trigger points which fire up into the base of the skull. The base of the skull is an area for for many of us to get very tight and sore and have a lot of tension in. Other areas of the body are this muscle right here, the pectoralis minor, which lies under the big muscle on top, is a small muscle underneath. This fires into the breast tissue right here. Women who have cystic fibrotic disease can have, remember that's an, that wherever these trigger points refer to can be ischemic, so we'll have less blood. So if you're having issues around the breast tissue, it may be caused, or one of the contributing factors may be that there is a trigger point in the pectoralis minor muscle, which is causing that area to have less blood. We would want to examine that muscle right there and release those trigger points to allow an increase of blood in the breast tissue area. You'll notice that also there are pain patterns going down the arm to the little finger. Lots of pain patterns up in the shoulder, going down into the wrist and hand. People who are suffering from carpal tunnel syndrome are going and having surgery and they're cutting the retinaculum around the wrist, or they're cutting a muscle up in the neck called the scalene muscle. What may be happening, a lot of times they're not specifically addressing the problem. It may be a trigger point developing in the teres minor, the pectoralis minor. Pectoralis is for people who have round shoulders. It brings the shoulder forward. So mothers, typists, massage therapists all have very tight muscles here. If that's left untreated for long periods of time, can develop trigger points. So we have to have an understanding of ischemia and trigger points. We find that these are very important contributing factors to people's pain. Okay. The next cause of pain that we address as massage therapists is nerve compression and nerve entrapment. Nerve compression is pressure on a nerve by an osseous or cartilaginous structure. Osseous means bone. Cartilaginous just means cartilage or disc. So basically, nerve compression is when a bone or a disc presses directly on a nerve. A common example of this is in the low back, when the pelvis rotates farther and farther and farther, you'll have the discs in the low back. The vertebrae is kind of like a stack of donuts with a electrical cord going up the middle. And between the donuts is a thinner donut or a disc. And when these get out of place due to when the pelvis rotates, you'll find that the discs start to migrate and they start to go over and bump into that electrical cord, the spinal column in between. And we'll start to send, you'll experience that as pain. That's often in the low back, they'll press on those nerves or compress the nerves as they come out of the spine, and people will experience that as pain going down their lower leg. What's that called? Sciatica, somebody knows.
That's right.
That will be pressing on the sciatic nerve. People will experience shooting pains when they stand up or sit down or stand for long periods of time or drive down the road in the Holden bus on a bumpy road. So you'll experience that as pain. That can be caused from trauma, from falling. Falling on your tailbone as a child, breaking your hip, falling off a horse is a common one, skating. There can be lots of reasons to develop trauma in the tissues. So we have to make sure that the bones are lined up on top of each other and the bones are not, and discs are not pressing on each other. A chiropractor will push the bone back in shape. Or put it back in alignment. This is helpful, but on a temporary basis, you have to understand what causes, we're looking at the factors that cause, what causes the hip to rotate like this? What causes the causes are that these muscles in the front become very tight and grip and pull the pelvis down. These muscles in the back also become very tight and shorten back here. So it's not enough for us to move bones in the first place. We can't do it because it's not in our scope of practice. But in the second place, you have to address the soft tissue which can be causing the pelvis to move. Another example of nerve compression common example is in the neck. When people go through a whiplash, they get thousands of pounds of pressure thrown into their neck, go like that. And they go forward, and then they go back and forward and back and forward and back about 10 times before their neck stops, all in a split second. This is sends enormous amounts of input into the spinal column. What happens is that there are muscles on the front which become, first they bleed, the body splints them for 72 hours, or your neck becomes very stiff and you can't move. This is the body mobilizing its resources to cause the area to remain still, because when the muscles go back and forth and are overstretched, they get little micro tears and they bleed. So the body very wisely splints the area and tightens all the muscles so that nothing moves, so that it can control the bleeding. After 72 hours, the muscles need to be, should relax, or start to relax, and return to normal tone. This doesn't always happen, and they can develop trigger points in them. What often happens is in a whiplash is that this normal cervical curve is in the neck, or the neck curve. The spine isn't supposed to be like a rod, it's supposed to have a nice S curve, which we'll go into in a little bit. What happens is that the muscles on the front start to tighten, and they start to take a cervical curve like this, and they start to straighten it, and it becomes straight like this. By these muscles tightening, they take the bone and they open it up. And what happens is that people say, gee, my neck hurts. And they go in and they have a massage, and somebody works on the back of the neck and softens the back of the neck, but it doesn't address the muscles on the front of the neck, which keep getting tighter and tighter because they become ischemic and they develop trigger points. And they, as they get tighter and tighter, the cervical curve disappears and it starts to push the disc in the neck back into the nerve root. And people start to experience a lot of pain in the back of the neck. Problems in the front, they experience it in the back behind their head. They also start, if left untreated, they'll start to experience numbness and tingling down their arms. This, a chiropractor may adjust the neck, but again, unless they push the trachea out of the way and go in and work on the muscles on the anterior part of the neck and release them and get blood back to them, the neck will keep getting worse. So as massage therapists, we deal in nerve compression, what's causing the bones to migrate and push into the nerve. So we need to address the soft tissues to get a long-lasting and effective result in getting people out of pain. So we have to understand the process of nerve compression on a root, on a nerve root. The next part of this is nerve entrapment. This is pressure on a nerve by soft tissues. This is by far the most common kind of pain that people experience. More common than subluxation or movement pressing on a bone, or excuse me, pressure on a, by a bone on a nerve, nerve compression. This happens around the spinal column and sometimes in shoulders and joints, but there's a lot more soft tissue in the body. And as the nervous system comes out of the spinal column, like a trunk, it gets finer and finer, more and more branches, until there are millions of little nerve endings in the skin, which would be the probably the area that more entrapment can take place than any other part of the body. So in the soft tissues, again, just like the ischemia, the nerves that are permeating a muscle, let's say, when they permeate the muscle and the muscle is in a state of spasm from a trauma or an injury, it strangulates the nerves. So this is very common that when people have, all of us have experienced tight muscles, in those tight muscles, you're putting pressure on the nerves and that fires the nerves and you experience that as pain. You also, when the nerves are tight, they cause vasoconstriction or a tightening, or they make the blood vessels smaller and the area gets less blood, and it becomes ischemic. And ischemic tissue is what?
Tender.
It's more tender. That's correct. So we need to look at these two factors for what's causing another factor that we deal with and what causes pain, which is nerve entrapment and nerve compression. The next thing that causes pain, as one of the contributing factors of pain in our bodies as humans, is postural distortion and imbalance in the muscular tonus system, resulting in the movement of the body off the coronal and mid-sagittal planes. The planes are the front view and side view of the body, are the coronal and mid-sagittal planes. So when the body starts to drift from being straight up off a correct and efficient posture, then we start to experience pain, and I'll explain how that happens. The body is meant, gravity has got a hold of us always. Living on the earth, you can't escape it. 33 pounds per square inch, you're being pulled down, is being exerted on your body every moment of your life. Nobody wins against gravity, but it's why some of us get shorter as we get older. Okay? First you get bigger, then you get shorter. Okay? So gravity is grabbing on us all the time. We're meant to, our bodies are designed to oppose gravity efficiently. When we oppose gravity efficiently, it takes very little energy. We have bones and a skeletal system to absorb or dissipate the force of gravity. When we're opposing gravity efficiently, we're balanced. When I was a piano tuner, I had to move pianos once in a while. Once in a while, a piano like that isn't too bad. I used to have to move the 1920 versions, which were these big old uprights, and they would weigh about 800 pounds. Not fun. I liked working on them more than I liked moving them. But once in a while, we'd move them, and what you would do to get it into a doorway or spin it in a doorway is you'd take, two of you would get on one end and you'd take an 800-pound piano and just with a sudden jerk, you put it up on a, balance it right on its corner and spin it around. Now an 800-pound piano, when it's balanced on its corner, I can hold up with one hand. It takes virtually no effort at all. And we used to do that, hold it with one hand and amaze the people while we spun it around and then moved it through a doorway. Now as the piano starts to come off the balance point, off the corner, as it moves the first 2 inches, it goes from 0 pounds to 10 pounds. And then as it moves the next few inches, it goes to 20 pounds and then 40 pounds. And as it goes a foot over, it weighs about 100 pounds. And then as it gets farther and farther down, then all of a sudden two people are doing that. The same is true in our body. As we stand efficiently with our heads over our shoulders, over our pelvis, over our knees, as our joints are stacked on top of each other, then there's very little effort used because there's a rigid framework in our body. Our bones don't get tired holding us up. Bones don't fatigue. But as we start to go over to the side, we start to get heavier and heavier, and we have to exert more and more pull from our muscles to keep us erect. And that uses a lot of energy and will go through a process of causing us a lot of pain. Let me show you what, this is what happens when you eat holding food for a long time. This is correct physiological posture. This is how it's supposed to work. These black lines that you see on the skeleton, these bone lines, they're actually gravity lines. How the body works efficiently. When it's in this position, the body will last for a long time. It will not work very hard. This is called the mid-sagittal plane. And it's basically, everything's on top of each other. The nose is over the chin, which is right over, bisecting all the spinal vertebrae, all the way down to the pubic symphysis and out. This is, it's very easy to see when people are off this way, to one side. People who've had driving along and get broadsided have a lot of energy that pulls them, and these muscles tighten and will develop trauma if not properly treated, and that will be in their body, and they will have, they'll be like this and not be aware of it. They'll just be off to the side. You see people that walk in an exaggerated way, very far off. This is very detrimental to these articular discs in the vertebrae, into the body. The body, it means that some of the muscles in the body are very constricted, which causes ischemia and trigger points, which makes people very tender. Okay, this is the coronal plane. This is a very useful diagnostic view for our work. You see that the gravity line comes in right in the top of the head, and it goes right through the ear, or the auditory meatus here. Then it goes right through the cervical vertebrae. So here's 1/10 your body weight, approximately. 1 to 2 to 3 to 4 to 6 inches off the coronal plane, hanging out in space. When it's in front like this, these bones don't support the head anymore. You have 14 pounds of being supported by these poor little muscles in the back of your neck. Everybody's like, oh boy, I got a headache today. You wonder why these are like that when your head's... People walk around like this, okay? This is a very important contributing factor. We wouldn't want to have our hand out for 12 hours a day or 16 hours a day. Wouldn't you get tired, especially if you had a book in it, like a 14-pound book? Do you think your arm would get tired after 2, 3 minutes, 5 minutes? And yet we have our head hanging out in space, unsupported by the cervical vertebrae as they should be. Below that is the shoulder. The head of the humerus should be right in line. You'll see that the spine then spins out of the way on this plane and has a nice arc into it, kind of like a leaf spring on an automobile. It's meant to take up some shock in the body through the rib cage. And we see that this is the center of gravity down in the pelvis here, this little black dot here. Here's the center of gravity from this view, right by the sacrum. You see that the gravity line comes back in through the lumbar spine. Our lumbar spine should be supporting this. They're huge. They're big vertebrae. They're meant to carry a lot of weight. And they're meant to be directly underneath us. The hip joint is supposed to be right underneath the pelvis, under the gravity line. You see that the gravity line goes right through this largest bone in the body. Our legs are supposed to be under us to support us. And then the shaft of the tibia, we have our knee, and the shaft of the shin bone should be right underneath us. And finally, the ankle. What we find most often in our practice is that the center of gravity is where we go wrong. We go wrong right from the word go. And what we find in 99% of the people that we examine is that this pelvis is not straight across like this, but is tipped. The great American posture is that this pelvis is tipped. And when you change your center of gravity, you make compensations all the way up and down the body. So what we find is this is a pelvic tip. When the body is like this in an efficient posture with the pelvis fairly flat, straight across, there's very little effort used to hold yourself erect. You're opposing gravity effectively. When the pelvis starts to tip, the knees lock back, okay? And they start to go backwards, and then the head starts to go forward like this. And then there's this joint called the TMJ joint. I don't know if anybody, has anybody here experienced TMJ pain? Somebody's experienced that. She's had surgery for temporal mandibular joint dysfunction, which we found dentists are treating this joint as an isolated part of the body. They just work on this all by itself. They think it's not affected by anything else. Our experience is that the temporal mandibular joint directly mimics the position of the pelvis. You can't, as soon as you go like this, the jaw goes forward. The head, when it goes forward, tries to keep itself in a horizontal plane, tries to keep the eyes level, and this always puts pressure on the joint, tightens the muscles, and drives the mandible up into the condyle, so the maxilla, and causes interjoint pressure. And by treating the TMJ joint all by itself, you're not addressing the problem. it needs to. What we're finding is by putting the pelvis underneath them, the head comes back and the pain and the pressure in the on the muscles and consequently on the joint in the jaw is decreased. So we need to look at the contributing and the causative factors of some of this interjoint pressure way up here, maybe here. Neck pain that happens here. People that have are in this position, Laker fans here? Most of the basketball players you see, like Magic Johnson or Larry Bird, have enormous quadriceps, so they can leap tall buildings in a single bound. They have these muscles on the front of the leg right here are huge, and they can jump vertically 3-4 feet. Awesome. What this muscle attaches to is this bone right there, and if you were going to pull the pelvis down, wouldn't you kind of grab right here and pull it down? So what these, if you'll notice the posture of people like Larry Bird and Magic Johnson, they all walk around like this with these huge legs. They notice Larry Bird has had, they all have knee problems, and Larry Bird has had two surgeries for knees and back recently. If his pelvis, the position of his pelvis were addressed, he'd extend his life, his basketball career, 5 years or so, and save him a lot of pain in his old age. So we have to look at the contributing factors. When the pelvis is back, there's a lot of knee pain develops. The arches collapse, and you have a lot of pain in the feet. When the head goes forward, the toes grip the ground, trying to keep you from falling over. So people who have what's called hammer toes, their toes start to drop like this. The position, this a lot of this is happening around the pelvis. It becomes very, very important in creating an efficient and a pain-free body. So we need to examine, when we do an assessment, we look at where the pelvis is, and we put the pelvis back under people. People will have lordotic curves. You see the state workers who are out there with their belts. Their belts don't go straight across. Their belts kind of go like this. Hey, put that thing over there. Beer belly thing over there. And they have, all of them have low back pain. Okay? It's not that they have huge stomachs. What the problem is that their intestines are spilling out of the bowl, pressing against the muscles of the abdomen. If you put their pelvis back underneath them, then all this would come back in. The low back pain that they all experience would be greatly reduced and alleviated. So we have to understand the role of postural distortion in the body. So we look at the pelvis. We should be a series of joints stacked on top of each other. And more often than not, we're not. We're off to one side. We have high shoulders, we have heads that are forward, we have rotated pelvises. The muscles are the ones that what will cause a pelvis to go forward are, as I said, tight quadriceps, weak hamstrings, tight muscles in the low back. And these can result from faulty biomechanics, jobs that we work on, trauma. There's many contributing factors. So we address the soft tissues of the body. Here's an efficient posture, pretty well stacked up. This is a woman with a lordosis, a very extreme curve here. When this increases and gives her lots of back pain, she'll probably have experience, if left untreated, will experience sciatica and probably cervical problems. She will, the curve increases here, it's compensated for by an increased curve here. This is a pelvis that's rotated forward. This is a pelvis that's rotated back, no cervical curve at all. Okay, these are the people who walk through life leaning with their hips. They kind of, they'll kick their knees as they walk, and they'll be back like this. Less common, but this is a pain pattern. The loss of cervical curve here is compensated by, lumbar curve, is compensated by an increased curve in the neck. See, her neck is how, this is her ear right here. How far forward of the gravity line is that? Three or four inches. That's hanging out in space, not being supported. The hip joint is not where her gravity line is. It's out, it's here, it's forward. Okay?
Question here.
Yeah.
It's very interesting. The men has perfect posture, but the women don't. Why couldn't you have one woman with perfect posture also?
Why don't you get up here and you can be the woman with perfect posture?
I don't think so, but where would we learn?
Posture, first is addressing the soft tissue. The other thing is just learning how to move and walk. Actually, your chance will come because on the beach video where we look at movement, it's the women who win out in the video. Oh, it's all the men are all the dorky looking guys.
Great, I'm glad to hear.
So we'll have equal time for that.
Thanks.
This is an anterior pelvis. These muscles become very weak, and as the pelvis is forward, again, here's a forward head posture. She will probably be experiencing a lot of pain in the low back, the cervical.
When you've got where that lumbar is increased?
Yes.
Are the shoulders then drooping forward? Or
she will experience this.
Okay.
This is a kyphotic curve. This will eventually wind up as Dowager's hump if left untreated. Remember, the force of gravity is going to drive this down, make this curve even worse, make this curve even worse with time. So we want to address this before the discs start to degenerate. Okay? This is a all too common posture. Okay? There's a lot in our society protect this area. Part of mothering is in nursing. Women go through a lot of this round shouldered work by doing work, by protecting, by nursing. So this is a common, there's a very tight in this area. Also women who have large breast tissue, the pectoralis minor helps support that breast tissue. So they have added factor of weight pulling down on these muscles, bringing the shoulders forward. Important for them to have a lot of support and brassieres that hook under the scapula and hold that up instead of real tiny straps that just cut into the shoulder high.
Is that kyphosis, lordosis syndrome, kind of genetic factor? Is that run in families? Or?
It can, but part of that is what's genetic and what's learned. I mean, don't we grow up mimicking our parents? In the beach video, we'll see people that there's families that they all kind of walk like this. Why? And the kids learn how much of it is genetic and how much of it is learned behavioral patterns. You know, as we mimic, if our parents stand like this, then pretty soon we think, gee, I love my parents. They're all right. They're perfect. So this is what we do. You have to educate them of. They have breathing problems when the diaphragm collapses like this. People are more prone to asthma, and they get stomach problems when you collapse like this. It's a lot of pressure on the organs of the body. Yes.
Yes, but don't you have a certain amount of heredity in which some muscles are stronger and bigger than others, just like with bigger noses or bigger ears or something?
Muscles, yes and no, but muscles are also developmental. I mean. That's partly true, but why are these 6 foot humongous body pumping women coming out of these little frail folks? They've learned a lot of what's going on now is in society is that there's a lot of awareness of physique, or actually there's a lot of weight training, a lot of pumping, a lot of people are changing their muscle tone. That's muscle is muscle adapts to the use and the function that you put it towards. When a muscle is like the back of the neck, you're supposed to have your cervical vertebrae holding up your neck. When your head's forward, then these muscles in the back take over the function of bones. Okay, muscles are supposed to be in charge of movement, but when the head's like this, then they become support structures and they change their function. The function of bones is to be a support function. But when the head's forward, then these muscles do the work that bones are supposed to do, and they start to become like bones. They become shorter, they become denser, they become thicker, and they become very painful. So partly the our physiology or our muscles are how we use our body. They're, your muscles will adapt for whatever function that you use them for. So if you use them to stand like this, they will adapt that function. If you use them as a, when I was a tree planter, I had huge forearms. When I was a piano tuner, I didn't need them. My forearms will change. So muscles are much more malleable than we give them credit for. They can change much more than, oh, I'm locked in into this physique. There are body types, yes. There are layers of muscle, but that is, there's much more function or plastic deformation than there is genetic deformation. It's not to say that there isn't some. We can't change genetic. We can't change a leg bone that's shorter than the other. But we can change, more often than not, people who have short legs have an ilium that's rotated backwards, like this. It looks like a short leg. They get an orthotic like a short leg, but they don't have a short leg. The pelvis is back. If you put this ilium down, all of a sudden they have the same length. What you find when you measure the length of the bones is that some people who have been called saying that they have short legs don't have short legs. They have functional short legs and not anatomical short legs. So the same is true with muscles are much more malleable than we can change, much more than we can bones.
Where would we learn this correct posture so we can enjoy all these health benefits?
Right here, right now. Pay attention.
A class like this is really going to do a lot.
You can learn it by people who specialize in soft tissue. If you can't, you can learn it from massage therapists, from people who do movement work. Actually, people in yoga can learn correct posture. You can do it by experimenting yourself. If I move my pelvis this way, does that relieve the pain in my lower back? Gee, that feels better.
Well, it makes so much sense.
Okay,
I'd rather do that than be popping pills.
I don't blame you. It's not popping pills is blocking the neurotransmitter so you don't feel what's actually taking place.
Exactly. And I'm always, when a doctor gives you a pain pill, I feel you're going to use the area that's hurting, if it's your arm, because it's not hurting you right now, and make the injury worse.
That's possible to do that. Again, there's not a lot of understanding about these things that you're being exposed to today, these principles. So we offer them to you so that people will have a choice in regards to their pain, so they can understand the relationship between soft tissue and pain and have a health alternative. Okay, this is a posterior cervical or posterior rotation. Again, flat, low back, head is forward.
I mean pelvis is tilted?
The pelvis is tilted backwards like this.
Backwards, okay.
So more rare, but sometimes there. Now we'll find that these women are wearing high heel shoes, tightening hamstrings and causing all sorts of low back cervical pain. And as soon as you start to shorten muscles, they become thicker. So there needs to be an awareness of how we're affecting our body. Okay, the male efficient model, we will look and see.
Of course.
You'll notice that all these muscles are imbalanced. The muscles in back are balanced, the hamstrings are balanced with the quadriceps. The gluteus maximus is engaged. The muscles that don't sink the spine but extend the spine are engaged. And the muscles in the front and back muscles are all in balance and allowing this to take place. We don't want to relax everything and become jellyfish. There's a certain amount of tone that's required for us to have structure. But we don't have too much tone. We'll talk about the proper levels of tone in a little bit. Okay, so these are the musculatures, which this doesn't mean a whole lot to me, so I'm not going to explain it to you. The three bodies, just three different posture types. Look at the suit line. This is a great indicator, as I said, for people who work on the highway. You look at their belt lines and they have, instead of a male pelvis should be in a 0 to 5 degree range. We found pelvises up to 45 and 50 degrees. We find children who can't walk because of their birthing process, who have pelvises rotated at 45 degrees, they literally can't walk because they're fall over forward. Their pelvises are so far forward that they say, gee, Johnny's 2 years old and he can't walk yet. How could he possibly walk with his pelvis so far anteriorly rotated? A two-year-old, you can take their pelvis and turn it back and have them walking in 10, 20 minutes. It doesn't take very long at all. It's much misdiagnosed. So we have to look at a very important, we spend a lot of time on the pelvis. Yes?
Sometimes it's hard to tell what the pelvis line is versus if there's a big gut or something like that.
There are techniques to, very simple techniques to that we use to assess them. There are ledges and bony prominences that we can put our fingers on that are not covered by soft tissue. And we use those to to understand the posture, do the pelvis. We take pelvic readings real quickly and easily, on, even on people who are very large. We love the skinny ones, but we love the big ones too. So the five principles that we work with in regards to pain, are ischemia, trigger points, nerve compression, and entrapment postural distortion. And the last thing we work with, actually the first thing we work with, is dysfunctional biomechanics. How people move, how does that affect their pain? Well, we'll find that people, if they don't, the body is taking static readings is one thing, but people aren't static, people move. And how they move is very important to their pain patterns. We'll find that movement involves momentum. And one thing about moving is that when you move, the momentum that you generate in your body needs to be dissipated. It needs to be sent out away from the body. And we do that by swinging our arms is one of the main ways that we dissipate the energy of our movement. So as we walk, our arms should swing and take the momentum and send it away from the central nervous system and out of our bodies. When our bodies don't move due to trauma or move in proper biomechanical ways, due to trauma, due to postural distortion, due to pain patterns, then what happens to all that momentum, which is a very high force in our body? If it hurts to move and we don't, if our neck is so stiff, for picking at names, the Carl Comer look, if we move like this because he suffers from spastic torticollis, then what happens to all that momentum? We take that force and we internalize it. And all that momentous force is then stored in the soft tissues of the body somewhere. So we spend time examining how people move, how they dissipate. Does their arm cut across in front of them when they walk? Do they kick their legs when they walk? Are they so sore in the low back that they move like this? It's possible. When they do that, they don't get a cross-crawl pattern, a good dissipation. As the hip goes forward, the shoulder goes forward, and a little swing there and back. They don't get that dissipation. You see pain patterns, you see people who walk like this. People who have that functional short leg that I was talking about, or long leg, and it's like walking in a half-inch hole all the time. And they'll feel that, and that bangs into the sacroiliac joint. They have sacroiliac pain. And as the pain increases, their movement gets less. And as their movement gets less, their pain increases. And the cycle begins. And as people who move have their arms cut across in front of them 10,000 times a day, they're going to be developing elbow and shoulder pain and neck pain. So we need to examine how people move. And so we want to correct people's movement, even if it's forced to begin with, so that it doesn't do any good to release the soft tissues of the body and then have somebody go out and do the, just walk. So you get them all loosened up and they feel good, and then they walk out and they go. They're going to facilitate all that right back into their body. So we need to address how they walk and get them back into proper biomechanics. Things like how you lift boxes. things like how you play tennis. We examine how runners run. Gee, I've been running for 2 years and I have this pain in my right hip. Well, golly, they've been running the same route for 2 years on a road that slants like this, a crowned road, and one leg is they're running 10,000 times a day with in a half-inch hole on a slanted road, and they wonder why they are developing pain and their right knee is blowing out. Why their sneaker? Gee, I wear out one sneaker before I wear out the other one. How come? We have to examine why that happens. So it's really important. People who are, I think of people in Wimbledon, who's the center court judge, who's watching tennis all day long. What's this mechanism? They have to look at the patterns that they do. So if you'll direct your attention up here, I'll give you a little bit of we'll get a chance to look at a few bodies and how they move. This is the beach video. This is where the women are in the chair. This man is Paul St. John, a Vietnam vet, a man who's been in pain. The man who did a lot of examinations and created a lot of this work.
Many people dissipate momentum very inefficiently. You'll see people who walk keeping their back still because their back bent, and they'll walk like this, kicking their legs. We call them knee kickers. You'll see other people who barely, because of the tension in their neck and shoulders, barely move their arms, and they look like this. They walk very stiff when they turn their neck. They turn their neck like this. Those are dysfunctional patterns called myotactic units, or movements of units. So the last thing we want to do is look at how people move and look at some dysfunctional biomechanical patterns and see what they look like and become familiar with them and learn how to recognize them. Because some of them that we're going to change with our therapy, and some of them we have to consciously bring to the person's attention, and they have to discipline themselves to move correctly. So in order to do that, what do you say we go to the beach?
You wish.
What is the correct physiological posture of the woman in the blue bathing suit, her ears positioned over her shoulder? Look at the right arms cutting across the bodies in front of these women. Look at the extreme elevated left shoulder in this young man with both arms internally rotated. This woman's right arm also swings across her body. This next woman has a severe crossing pattern of her right arm. Notice the position from the back. The man in the white t-shirt dissipates momentum mostly from the elbows down. This woman dissipates momentum efficiently with her arms as they swing by her sides. As does this woman. Notice the back of this man's hands pointing forward. This will lead to elbow pain and dysfunctions of the wrist. The next five shots show concave abdominal postures, which usually lead to abdominal dysfunction and cervical pain due to the forward head postures.
Call these people bananas.
Notice the forward rotations of the shoulders. This leads to tight pectoral muscles. The boy in the pink has a severe concave pattern. The poor movement you see in this man's left arm is precipitated by extreme shoulder tightness. The same with the woman on the right and her right arm. This man has extremely poor dissipation of momentum
Notice that he barely moves either of his arms. Here's another high right shoulder combined with severe forward head posture. This severe forward head posture always leads to lower cervical deterioration in the vertebral column.
How far forward does it?
Tight adductor muscles lead to knock-kneed walking patterns as you see in this woman's left leg. Here is the classic knee-kicking pattern. This dissipates momentum from the knees down. We're doing this because it's hard to be really posteriorly rotated.
This is great.
The woman in the green also has a knee-kicking pattern, a little more severe with the left leg than the right. Here is a classic lumbar pain patient. Notice the lordotic curve in the low back. Notice how he waddles from side to side. This causes deterioration of the sacroiliac joint. Here is another waddling pattern that deteriorates the sacroiliac joint. This man combines a waddling pattern with a left arm that cuts across his buttock area. This will tighten the rotatories and multifidus in the thoracic area around his shoulder blade.